rendait tout le monde antenne, arc et flèche.
Hello, hi. I am Anna Vass, and this is the second episode of the Voyage Out radio series. A couple of years after the tsunami turned toxic disaster in Fukushima, a new island emerged near the archipelago of Ogasawara in the Pacific south of Japan. The Voyage Out plots speculative bridges between these parallel worlds as a mutating archipelago. 2022 is the second episode of the radio series and is a collaboration made with Nunu da Luz and featuring Ayami Awazuhara as our voice and interpreter. The radio series is a sonic exploration of the film to come as a transmission. This episode begins with a recap from our last.
During those disastrous years, i.e. your present, which is my past, I was admitted into a time travel alliance that allowed me to travel far into the future, yet with no return. I now count time in function of the moons that we can see through the most perforated ozone layer. Out there, the carcasses of old factories now form an earthbed for beings growing from the mutant juice of pollutant forests. Despite the radioactivity and high temperatures, these new beings thrive. The isle where we now inhabit is a fruit of the gigantic seismic changes happening in the Pacific Ocean during those disastrous years. After the nuclear disaster in Fukushima, Isle of Good Fortune, we migrated into a new island which sprung up as a result of the disaster. Hundreds of years have passed since the birth of the isle. In the year of 2022, the calamities of a new world order were such that I committed to leave my time in order to join the scientific expedition to study the then new island that had emerged in the Pacific south of Japan. Little did I know that it was not purely an exploratory voyage, but a kind of intertemporal voyage. As I bathe here in the digital sea of data that became our memory, I connect with you. Like in surf, we must be able to surf a good wave in order to succeed in transmitting to multiple times and places. If I float, I am connected. I hope I can stay on. And when our communication tools broke down, we were shipwrecked on the volcanic coast. There, we lay exposed to magma for a long and unconscious period of time, a kind of long and warm sleep. Yet, when we're asleep here, we are always awake somewhere else, and this somewhere else may have become my reality.
you are right. I think we are now connected. The waves feel calm and mellow, just perfect for our connection. It feels like a distant dream to hear these voices again. They haunt us since the voyage from which we will never return. Yet, to remember is to forget, to see the new. Here comes my translation of Kaori-san. Or should I say, interpretation? Some parts are very abstract. Context seems to be so far in the past. I will try to be as literal as possible, speaking in the language of archipelago.
It made a loud sound. You could hear it only from the coast, but there was an air vibration everywhere. The windows resonated. Yes, there was the sound. And it was even louder at the sea, like an explosion, she said. Then we asked if it had affected her farm, and she replied that no, nothing was affected, but there were ashes spread everywhere when the wind blew from the west. She said the difference was that they have never seen previous eruption visually. Before, they used to say, "There seems to be an eruption over there." And then the conversation was over. But now, there are cameras of NHK going around and filming every scene, she claimed. Here, Kaori explains the origin of her bees. She thinks they came from Germany, from Europe, or she says, from a foreign place. But she knows they came firstly with a ship during the Meiji government. They brought Western honeybees and settled them firstly in Hibiya Park or Shinjuku-gyoen. Later, they sent them to six other locations, and one of them was Ogasawara. This was the very beginning of the history of beekeeping in Japan. Before the war, many farmers used to keep them. Now, she says, honeybees can't live in the wild because of hornets. hence they are domesticated. She thinks they made some kind of hybrid species and that there might be no original one left. She's now taking honey orders.
Scientists found the cause of the world's sudden dying population of bees is related to cell phones. But the bees send cell phone signals transmitted when the phones ring, causing them to emit heavy buzzing noises. This frequency confuses the bees, making them fly erratically. Bees use the Earth's magnetic field as a compass, but their navigation is now compromised by cell phone radiation.
She comes back to say that Ogasawara was the only place where wild bee could exist. And yet, they're not really wild bees, but are domesticated bees that escaped. Normally, they couldn't survive, but here, they can. And that's why they stayed. In the mainland, they could never survive. I don't know how strong it was. The maximum wind speed was 288 kilometers per hour. Was there a typhoon? Kaori replied that there had been no typhoons. Yet, she seems worried that a huge one would come at any moment. She said it was an El Nino year, so it would be no surprise if a huge typhoon came. She wasn't sure, but she was afraid. Any typhoon can damage heavily if it hits directly. In 1997, seven typhoons hit the island. Winds blew at 180 kilometers per hour, and everything here was devastated. All the roofs flew away. I guess some roofs should still be on the mountains over there. I was not living here back then, but I heard that when it blew, even goats and boats were thrown over the hills, she recounted. That day, she had been binding the beehives so they wouldn't fly away. There was a disaster before, where the beehives fell down and turned over. Were they dead? We wondered. No, not all of them would die. They'd crazily fly around and their nests would be broken. There was a time when El Niño and La Niña caused so many typhoons that the year after that, they had a very good harvest. She says, when a tree is in a weak condition, it blooms more than usual. It's a natural strategy to survive. So, after a huge typhoon, we had very rich nectar.
だから、でっかい台風の後はすっごい蒸しが濃い。 日本が生んだ怪獣映画、大体これは原爆が爆発することが題材だったり、日本がまあ戦争に負けるってことが題材だったりしてるんですけど、で怪獣っていうのが、地球のどこかにいると。そしてそれが理不尽な人間どもをやっつけに行くと。そしてその原因は何だったのかっていうと、人間がやったそういう武器の開発や環境汚染。
This is a recording we made with Miyagawa-san.
古い価値観の。
It is hard to know in which tense I should translate this to. Since in Japanese, past, present, and future are looser than in English. They're floating, like us.
その怪獣たちのふるさとと言われる。
So, I will tell you what I hear as it happened in the past.
近海と小笠原諸島のいろんな島がまあモデルになってるっていう。で、そういう
中で、 He said, Japanese monster movies were usually based on an explosion of a nuclear power plant or losing a war. Somewhere on Earth, there were monsters, and they came to revenge upon humans.The reasons for their revenge was because we created weapons, we polluted nature, and we broke with the old model and accepted capitalism. The ocean around Okasawara was a home to those monsters, where they belonged to.He continued, In the late 50s, there were lots of sea monsters living in peace. However, human devastated and polluted the earth, and now it is no longer a place where any creatures can live in.
でも有名ですけども、固有の植物や、またはそこに生息するエコシステムというものが評価されて、自然の美しい場所と、まあ、言われているわけです。
He concluded, thinking about what was going wrong in the world, people joked saying, bad guys should be trampled by monsters. So somehow, I think he created a piece about his own narrative or monster story over 200 years ago. And he said,The landscape you are looking at then is a key to the birth of those monsters. The forest, deep in the island, far in the ocean, in the archipelago.
ース予定しておりました。盆踊りは天候不良が予想されるため中止いたします。